Hi, I'm Eric Schlepfer. Let's talk about the 80K 2012. With me. So just to finish the introductions, over here is Dmitry Grinberg, who worked on the software. Also over here is Travis Geiselbrecht, who worked on the software as well. And since I didn't mention it before, I worked on the hardware for the 80K 2012. So first, let's talk about accessories for Android. There's a couple of ways to connect accessories to Android devices. That includes USB and Bluetooth. So through USB, we can use last year's Android Open Accessory API. And through Bluetooth, there's a variety of protocols for a variety of purposes that we can use. And so a lot of the accessories you can build here, commercial purposes, include audio dock, exercise equipment, medical devices, that kind of thing. But there's also a lot of capability for hobby projects as well, such as a robot controller and all kinds of wonderful things that that people can do with this. So I'm sure you're dying to see what the 80K 2012 looks like, so let's just go ahead and take a look. And here we have it. We've attempted a little bit more than we did last year. All right, so what is this thing? This is an alarm clock. You can take it out of the box and plug it in and begin using it as an Android-connected alarm clock right away. It's also an audio dock. If you plug it into the USB connection, you can transfer audio from your phone to the device and play it back in real time. You can do exactly the same thing over Bluetooth as well. And it also acts as an Android accessory hacker platform. It's totally extensible. You can go in and edit all the code. You could even go in there with a soldering iron and make all kinds of changes to it. So let's talk about some of the features here. We've loaded it down with a lot of good stuff this year. So we've got a light sensor in the corner that can sense ambient light levels, proximity, and it has a built-in colorimeter, which we'll talk about a little bit later. There is a capacitive slider control on the top for adjusting the volume, adjusting brightness, color, all kinds of other functions. And we've put in a bunch of capacitive buttons as well. In fact, almost the whole front panel is capacitive. There are also 64 RGB LEDs. So all those seven-segment display segments here, you can control the color, set them to whatever you want, display patterns, all kinds of cool things. Okay, now I'm sure you're wondering what's inside, so let's go ahead and take it apart. It's very easy. You just squeeze the case. There's not a single screw in this entire design. It's held together by magnets. And here it is, unfolded. This is one of the first devices that's actually designed to be taken apart, because we want you to take it apart and hack on it. So on the inside, let's look at some of the component pieces. On the upper part, there's a speaker, and we use that to play back alarm sounds, audio from Bluetooth or USB. And if it looks a little odd to you, that's because it's a transducer. It connects to the back panel of the device, and it uses the entire back surface as a speaker. So you get big sound out of a small device. There's also a whole bunch of sensors in there as well. The 80K is aware of the temperature, the humidity, the barometric pressure, the acceleration, and even the local magnetic field. Just imagine the potential for that. Also, on the side of the device is an NFC tag. So when you first get your device, you can take your Nexus device and hover it over the tag, and it will send you to the App Store to download the app. Let's talk about the microcontroller. I remember last year we had a little AVR processor, a little 8-bit processor, and it's a great little processor, but we decided to do better a little bit this year. So this device has a 32-bit ARM Cortex M3 processor. We've connected a Bluetooth device to it and an SD card, and if some of the stuff looks a little bit familiar, that's because it's completely programmable through the Arduino IDE. So if you don't want to use it as an alarm clock, you can actually take it apart and pull the entire board off of it, and it's an Arduino, except it's 32-bit. So instead of writing code for a processor running at 16 megahertz, you can take that same code and run it at 84 megahertz. Okay, let's talk about the phone application. So again, if you take your Nexus device and you hover it over the NFC tag, you can pick up the application. You can plug in through USB, and that will automatically load the application for you. Once you've launched it, it'll give you a little connect menu, and so you can use this to connect through Bluetooth, which is pretty straightforward. So just search for devices on Bluetooth, and it'll show up as the ADK 2012. Click the connect button, and it will show a little code on the front of the device. You can just click OK here and pair up. And once you're done, launch the ADK application and click use Bluetooth, and then pick it off the menu, and you're done. That's it. So one more step than you would have to use for a Bluetooth headset. If you want to connect it through USB, you do what you would do last year. Just plug it in, and it works. Magically launches the application. And once you've done that, you'll get the main screen here, which has a number of different functions here. You can set the time. You can set the alarm, set the color. You can choose some display settings. And you can lock the device as well, so you won't accidentally brush up against the CapSense and change your alarm. Setting the time is very simple. You get a little time picker like this. And if you just click through that, it sets it to your cell phone network time. So it's a very quick way to update the time on your alarm clock. Alarms are similarly easy. You can just come in, click on the menu, set the alarm time, and you get to choose the alarm sound. There are a number of sounds that we preload onto the SD card, and they're all in the open source OGG format. You can put all your own sounds on there as well, and we've got a built-in OGG Vorbis decoder. All the source code is right there for you to look at. Okay, now let's talk about setting the LED color. And there's a couple of ways to do it, but my favorite way is something that Dimitri here will demonstrate for us. So let me go ahead and switch over to his screen. And so we can see the clock that he's been operating here. Okay, so Dimitri, go ahead and show us the color picker mode. I did tell you about a colorimeter.
Okay, so he's got we can grab different colored swatches and have the device pick up their color.
And so, of course, you can do this from the application as well. But just imagine the possibilities. You could take, for example, little colored jelly beans and make a robot that can recognize the color and sort them. I mean, the possibilities are endless with this type of sensor. You guys will love it. Okay, I'd like to pass things off to Dimitri now to talk about Bluetooth sound and storage.
Thank you, Eric. So, as Eric mentioned, we added Bluetooth to this device, by which we mean we added real Bluetooth. A lot of Arduino projects and similar small embedded devices use Bluetooth to serial converter chips, which just give you a virtual serial port. That's all nice and great, but it doesn't give you too much flexibility. So here in the ADK 2012, we have a real Bluetooth chip. It's a TI-CC2564, and it's connected over UART to the main processor. We have the onboard antenna, so everything you need to do to play with Bluetooth is right in the ADK. We wrote our own little Bluetooth stack for the ADK, mostly because it's a very simple one. It runs on bare metal, and it's BSD licensed. So you can just grab it and use it. You don't have to pay anyone any royalties. You don't have to disclose your code, nothing. It is very simple. It supports multiple concurrent connections. We implemented a service discovery protocol server, so you can advertise your services so devices can discover it. And if you do want RFCOM, which is a Bluetooth serial, we have that as well. Here we have a few lines of code just to show the functionality we have available. You can set your device name, get remote device names. You can do device discovery. You can make your device connectable, discoverable, everything else you'd expect out of a Bluetooth stack. If you want to play with low levels of Bluetooth, you can use L2CAP protocol, which we give you access to. You can create L2CAP sockets. You can receive connections on them. It's all extremely simple to do. Whenever data arrives, a callback gets called, and you can process it, and you can send data back with a simple function call. The data is sent asynchronously, so in fact, you don't have to keep it around. You don't have to worry. It'll get sent whenever it's needed to. You just call one function. And this is something you would use, for example, to implement Bluetooth HID if you want to have the ADK pretend to be a keyboard. But of course, the way Bluetooth discovers what services your device has is SDP. It allows devices to query and receive responses about what services your device supports. We have a fully working SDP server in our device that supports the entire SDP spec, so you can discover services on here. The API is, once again, extremely simple. You can just add and remove descriptors using two functions, and as soon as you add a descriptor, it begins being advertised. And of course, the ADK source code includes examples of this because that is how the phone application communicates with the ADK. For virtual serial ports, of course, we have RFCOM, which acts to you just like a serial port. You'll get a callback when data arrives. You can call a function to send data. And once again, the example is in the ADK. We support multiple connections, and it's actually quite fast. So I've tried making a small ADK application that just pipes data back to you, and we got 1 megabit full duplex throughput through this chip and through the entire ADK code stack.
So kind of what this means for you guys is that not only is this protocol stack completely exposed to all of you, you guys can look through all the lower layers, all the upper layers, but RFCOM is a great way to get started with it. So if all of these acronyms don't really make a whole lot of sense to you, if that's something you don't want to dig into, then you can just look at this example we have on this slide right here, and using RFCOM, which is the simplest serial protocol, is literally that simple. So it's very scalable.
And we've tried this with multiple OSs, not just Android. It works with Linux and a few other OSs we've tried as well. And the other thing we added to the ADK this year is A2DP support. So the ADK is actually a fully working Bluetooth speaker. We have an SBC decoder in here. It supports mono, all three stereo versions, everything you'd need out of a Bluetooth device. And we've also tested it with multiple OSs, including Android and Linux, and it does work.
Would you like to demonstrate that now?
I don't know if I have any. I guess I can play some alarms. Sure.
Let's give it a shot. I'm not sure what the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum looks like in here, but we'll see
what happens.
We'll
find out soon enough.
So let's consider this a stress test of the Bluetooth stack. So of all these people with Bluetooth-connected phones out here, and I can imagine 2.4 gigahertz right now, let's take a look and see if this will,
I want to see what ringtone I can grab.
I hope you've already paired with it, because you're going to get a very long list of devices.
I imagine so, yes. There, well, I guess it's not very loud, but you can hear it.
And it's ringing. Your alarm clock is ringing.
It's not playing out of my phone. You heard it out of the ADK. And on the phone side, the Bluetooth is very, very simple. So for example, here is an RFCOM sample for you. And it's very easy to make this work. This is literally the code you need to communicate with the ADK in the simplest form. You create a connection, and as you see, we do a discovery using this UUID. This is just a UUID you create yourself, and as long as it matches on the ADK side and your Android side, the connection will be made. And then you get an input stream and an output stream. So in Java, you just send bytes and receive bytes. There's no further complications for you to deal with. One of the other additions this year to the ADK, as you've just seen, is sound. And we've made it really, really easy for everyone to use this. So the audio data is piped to the audio digital analog converter using DMA. So your code doesn't have to conform to any timing requirements or really do anything complicated. It just works. The API is very simple, as you can see. You can just enqueue an audio buffer, and that buffer gets played whenever the audio hardware gets to it. And the code will block until it's time to do that. Or you can use instead a try audio buffer, and that way you can know if the current audio buffer is already full. The thing you see there with the source is one of the interesting things about the ADK. We didn't want to put a full audio mixer in it, not because we couldn't, but we just didn't think it was appropriate. So instead, there is some code in here to do audio lockout. So there's a fixed priority of services. For example, alarm overrides anything else. So if you try to play a file while the alarm is going on, alarm wins and your data gets dropped. And of course, this is all code you can modify. So if you want to add your own audio mixer, you're free to do so.
What this means for the people that are going to use it as an alarm clock before starting to hack on it is that if you set up and you've got music playing on it, and then the alarm goes off, the alarm will interrupt the music, just like you would expect it to.
And we went a little further than that, because no one likes uncompressed audio. So as Eric previously mentioned, we did have an OGG decoder in here now. So the alarms that are in the device are OGG format. And the API for that is extremely simple. The simplest way is just to call play OGG and give it a path. That's all you have to do. The audio will just start playing. Also, you can do it in the background if you wanted to. And we also have a global volume control. For storage, we have a microSD slot on the device, and all the devices have a microSD in them already. And the API is very simple, as you would expect. There's an SD driver in place and a FAT16, 32, and 12 driver built in. It's got all the functions you'd expect. You can open files, close files, read them, write them. You can create directories. A few things that most embedded file system drivers don't have. You can also format a card or move files. And this is all, once again, code you get, code you can modify, reuse, whatever you want. Now I want to hand it over to Travis to talk about some of the USB things.
Thank you, Dimitri. So the ADK also has USB, as it did last year and similar today. Dimitri's going to show us the two ports on the back. In fact, that's the inside of it. There are two USB ports on this device. The first one is used for programming. It looks like a standard FTDI-based serial port. That's the one you use for debugging and
I think you're on the wrong side.
Yeah.
There you go.
This thing's upside down. It's really hard.
Yeah, see, so there's two ports here. They're both micro USB. The other one was one that's really interesting. That's a USB host port. So on ADK1, there was same thing, USB host, but it was implemented as an external chip that actually handled most of it. For this time around, we actually pulled the host stack into the ARM processor. In the case of this particular ARM, it had an on-the-go USB controller, so we put it in host mode and implemented the stack. So the full source is available. It's running on the ARM. It does everything that we'll talk about here in a minute. If you've never used Android Accessory Protocol, it actually shows up in an inverted way that you normally expect. The device implements host, the accessory device, and the phone or tablet or, you know, brown sphere or something shows up as a actual device to the ADK. And really, the nitty-gritty details is there's a little handshake at the beginning, and then it ends up exporting two bulk endpoints, and it's just data in and out. Very similar to what we did last year. And then it's up to you to format whatever protocol you want.
So, Travis, you did mention a sphere, and what you're referring to is the Nexus Q demo that's happening right now on the third floor with that giant ball and the robot arm and all of that. That's all being done through an ADK2 from a Nexus Q using the Android Open Accessory Protocol.
Yeah, so actually, if you look there's a ball. And that's running an Arduino sketch that was written a couple weeks ago. You've actually already seen one, and most people hadn't recognized that it was actually an ADK.
It was at that point I really appreciated the power and simplicity of Arduino, because we were down to the wire, and I had to get this thing done, and so I just whipped up a quick sketch, and it worked great. As you can see, if you go up to the third floor. Go ahead.
Oh, and so also, here's the list of the API. It's a very simple API on the device side. For the accessory protocol, most of the actual API is setting the different strings, which is what your device will show up to. There's a list of strings that you can match against where you can name yourself, you know, in this case, ADK2012, or my cool widget, and that's exactly how the app on the Android side will know which app to connect to or what the protocol version is. So most of the API is just for setting those strings. And at the very bottom, you basically have three calls. Are you connected? Send data, receive data. There's not much to it. It doesn't format it. It's just a string of bytes. It's up to you to define whatever protocol you want. In our case, we actually developed about 10 or 15 opcode send and receive protocol to support all the sensors and whatnot on that. We use the same protocol to punch over Bluetooth as well, so it's quite straightforward.
So you can look at the sketch that we'll provide with the full source code and see that as an example of sort of a medium complexity example of transferring data back and forth over USB.
Right, and this is actually essentially the minimum setup. You'll see at the top we initialized the ADK and set the accessory strings for whatever your device will show up as. And then in the main loop, you basically are just testing, are you connected, are you not? Send data, process it, send it back. It's not much to it. It's a little bit more complexity on the Android side, but this, of course, is not any different from last year. The accessory protocol's been in Android since Gingerbread. But for the most part, you set up the connection, and you do a little bit more error checking than on this slide, but probably about twice as much code in the final solution. But then at the bottom, you end up with two input streams, input-output stream, You punch your protocol over that, and that's pretty much it. Not a lot to it. There is a little bit of string matching that you do inside the app to decide which device to connect to. And, of course, Android lets you register a particular app to start automatically when it sees this particular accessory. And that's all handled inside the manifest of the app.
So if you notice that the last two lines look familiar, you're right, because we use the very same stream mechanism for Bluetooth. In fact, in our application, what we've done is we've abstracted it and wrapped them in two different classes that both inherit from a master class that has two stream objects. And that allows our ADK application to use either USB or Bluetooth with exactly the same code. And you, of course, can use that code in your own projects as well.
And there's one more feature that we added for this one. And this is new since last year. Part of a feature that was added in Jelly Bean is there is a generic USB audio mechanism. And it's an extension of the accessory protocol. And basically, this is, of course, documented on the Android side. There's actually no API involved, which is why there's no code to actually show you. But basically, it's a little handshake that happens when the device goes into accessory mode, and then the phone or tablet or round spherical thing turns into a USB audio device. Basically looks like a microphone, more or less, to this. It's full 16-bit, 44.1 PCM data, no compression or anything on that like that. And what we're using this device for is essentially an example code. Right? Here is an example of how you would go implement it. You might not even use this exact code, but you know, if you're designing something based on a PIC or an AVR or something more exotic, you could also use the same thing. This is, of course, well documented, so this acts like an example to it. Same thing with, like I said, this is in Jelly Bean and above. All devices have it. If it's got Jelly Bean, it supports this protocol.
So what this means for all of you is that you can take your Jelly Bean Nexus that you got here, plug it into your ADK, and without any menus or configuration or anything, you can immediately begin playing audio through it.
Yeah, you'll see a little pop-up that says connected as an audio device, and then that's it.
And then it just works.
Yep. All right, so I'll hand it back over to Eric, who's going to go through the rest of the fun gadgets you can do with it.
The pretty lights. Let's talk about blinking lights. There are 64 RGB LEDs on this guy, 6 7-segment digits, 2 colons that you can control separately, 8 icon indicators, and 12 party mode lights. I can't wait to see what you guys do with those. That'll be fun.
Camera 3.
Actually, I think Dimitri might have done a little bit of a demo here, so let's go and switch over to that camera and take a look. So he's actually been busy coding up a bunch of different demos. Dimitri, that looks really good. He's been going through so many different visualization algorithms over the last couple of days. I just look over at his desk and, oh, look at that, there's another neat pattern. Very cool. So I'd love to see what you guys come up with as well. Please go and record videos, put them up on YouTube. I look forward to seeing all of that. So the API to control those LEDs is very straightforward. Since we handle all the LED muxing and the LED controller in the background through an interrupt-based system, there's really not a whole lot you have to do. Just LED write, put in the index of the LED, and the red, green, and blue values, and then it just sort of magically happens, and you don't have to worry about anything. If you want to get more complicated, you could use the LED draw letter function and put in essentially an ASCII value, and that will show up on the digit that you've selected. Now, granted, it's a 7-segment display, so certain letters like M and N and some of those other tricky ones we can't display, but we do our best. So play with it and see what you think, and those are the LEDs. Let's talk about the capacitive touch sensors. There are actually 12 buttons, one each for the up and down on each segment. And what that allows you to do is if you're in clock mode, you can set the clock just by touching the top or the bottom of each digit. Dimitri, did you want to demonstrate that?
Why not?
Okay, let's switch to the camera and take a look here. So it's a little hard to talk about it, but let's see what the demonstration looks like.
I can try setting time. There's 11, 10. You can also just do it quicker.
And let me tell you, this is great because I have one of those old alarm clocks at home, you know, where it's got the hour button and the minute button, and then you're hitting the button and you're like, okay, I'm getting there, oh, I went too far. Now you get to go all the way back around again.
It also works for setting the alarm and enabling and disabling it.
Very nice. So there's a lot you can do with those buttons. We've also got a slider control on the top of the device, and so we use that as a volume control. And depending on the mode that you're in, it can also adjust the color of the LEDs as well. So since we've got the demo screen up, you might want to go to color, and we can take a look at that.
Sure.
And so that just runs through all these different colors. Very pretty. Excellent. Thanks, Dimitri.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about sensors. You got a little bit of a preview of some of those sensors when I was talking about it earlier. So there's a thermometer, hygrometer device that will give you the temperature as well as the relative humidity in percent. I think everybody that I showed it to came by and had to breathe on it to see if their breath would, like, increase the humidity, which it did. And, yes, I was able to saturate the sensor. There's also a barometer that's in the device. It's incredibly sensitive. In fact, it's so sensitive to pressure that if I take an 80K and I hold it up here and then I drop it down here, it can tell the difference in pressure. We've also got, thank you. We've also got an accelerometer magnetometer. So let's switch to the camera again. And so Dimitri's going to show us what that looks like on the real-time display.
So this is a device in accelerometer mode. So blues are negative, reds are positive. So I can rotate it and see the accelerations change. And we can do the same for a magnetometer as well. So I can attempt to find some direction of north here if I knew how to interpret this data. But it does show some random values, so as far as looking cool goes, it works. And the other sensors are here as well. So there's the temperature, 26.3 Celsius, humidity. I'm not going to make Eric breathe on this. We have the current pressure, proximity, and you already saw the color matching mode.
Thanks, Dimitri. It's funny, when we were doing some rehearsals for the demos, we were running this off of a battery, and he picked this up, and he literally threw it at me, but it was in accelerometer mode, and all the numbers went to zero because it's essentially in free fall. And so, of course, I was a little scared because here's this thing flying through the air, but then I'm looking at the LEDs, hey, they're all zero. Physics works.
Unfortunately for you, he did not get hit.
Okay, so the API that's involved is very simple, and it actually handles all the calibration calculations, of which there are many, especially that barometer. There's a lot of number crunching that we had to do to get real numbers. But the good news for you guys is that all that code has been done. It's all written, and the API is very simple. You just make a function call here to, for example, barrel read, and you just pass in pressure and temperature, and it will go and take those pointers and put numbers in them, and now you've got the pressure and the temperature. It's very simple. All right. Dimitri is going to talk about the sample code for the clock sketch in the Arduino.
Thank you. So the code of everything that I'm demonstrating here, this is all built in. We're giving this code to you, of course. And there's a few interesting things to look into that, and there's absolutely no way I can go through all of it or even large piece of it. The interesting thing to mention here, if you've ever used the Arduino before, is a lot of this stuff happens in the background. Some of it's interrupt-driven, some of it is not. So we actually have a small cooperative multitasking system behind the scenes to let everything happen behind the scenes, like Bluetooth and USB. So once in a while, you have to call ADK event process, which just allows the ADK to process all of its background work. And you can do that whenever you're in a busy loop or in some other such place. And you know, if you don't do that, bad things will happen. So please do.
And so just to go back to that, the multitasking thing sounds complicated. Like, do I really have to worry about that, or is it as simple as making that function call every once in a while?
So if you don't want to play around with multitasking, you just make that function call and everything works. If you want to, you can play around with the multitasking, and it's actually very simple. There's two functions, really, if you care about, one to launch a thread and one to yield, and the thread dies just whenever you return from that function. So if you want to use it, go ahead. It is in the code. And the other example here is how we display the time, and it is just these few lines. I skipped the minutes and seconds, but you just get the RTC and display them. The next line you see there is how the alarm sounds are played for the alarm. And also, we have an alarm preview that does that as well. So if I go to the alarm mode, I don't think we have a microphone on anymore, but it does do that using the aug play background. As soon as I let go, it gets canceled. And also, we have the process USB accessory function, which handles the USB messages that arrive. That gets called in a main loop, unlike the USB code, which gets called from the USB, or sorry, Bluetooth code, which gets called from the callback. This is actually that callback. And the data arrives, and we pass it to ADK process command, which just processes the command received and sends back a response. That function is actually in common between Bluetooth and USB, so the protocol is the same. So when you're writing your Android application, you shouldn't need to know or care how you're connected to the ADK. Everything should work exactly the same.
Excellent.